Hello, and welcome to Ask Dr. Dawn. The opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers, and this is a program intended for education and entertainment. It should not be construed as a substitute for a medical consultation.
Hi, you're on the air with Dr. Dawn.
Good evening. Is Dr. Dawn taking a general medical question?
Of course.
Great. I have a question about single-side hearing loss. I got this about a week ago, and I never had it before, and curious what causes it, and what do you do about it? I've heard that you take steroids and prednisone or something, but I just want to get your opinion on that.
Well, the first thing you do as a medical person is you ask the person if they've had a cold or allergy symptoms recently.
Okay,
because if they have, then what they may end up having is just a blocked eustachian tube. Snot gets into this little tube that's kind of a ventilation tube that equalizes pressure between the world and the other side of the eardrum. And if you get a vacuum in there, which is what happens when you lose that ventilation tube, the nitrogen in the atmosphere actually absorbs into the bloodstream. You've probably heard of the bends, which people get when they go diving. That nitrogen is part of the atmosphere, and so normally it's behind the eardrum. It absorbs into the bloodstream, then you've got a vacuum. The eardrum gets sucked up against the bones, and you can't hear. And so often what we'll do is mucus thinners and steam and other things to try to open that up. And a simple peek in the ear at the ear will tell you whether the eardrum looks like it's sucked in, and you can have you can try popping your ears, and if that changes if that makes a noise in the ear that's blocked, then that's probably what's going on. The other kind of hearing loss that's sudden is not a good one, and that's the one you're thinking of with the steroids. That's a idiopathic unilateral hearing loss, and we do not have a good explanation, but it's like a short circuit in the acoustic nerve. And sometimes with the steroids, or sometimes maybe with the phase of the moon, we really don't have good data that the steroids are curative. That does work. And in general, in medicine, I'm going to make a little joke and say, if you don't know what to do about something, throw some steroids at it and see what happens.
Hey, could it be earwax?
Yes, that's another one too. Yeah, occlusive earwax is, nowadays I see a lot of earwax, actually. Thank you, John. Kind of dumb for me not to mention that.
That's what I'm here for.
Yes, exactly. And it's because of the earbuds. You know, people stick those plugs in their ear all the time, and you can push the wax back in, and you can basically tamp it down. And I pulled out the most amazing thing out of someone's ear just a couple of weeks ago. I actually tweeted it. It was about 6 inches long.
Oh, wow.
Looked like a tapeworm, but it was actually just wadded up skin. She was a Q-tipper, as we call them, and you know, every day after her bath and or shower, she cleaned out her ears with Q-tips and she pushed that skin in a little deeper until finally she just packed it all in. Couldn't pack it anymore.
Can't hear, but that's pretty easy to take care of too.
I tell you, I talked to a friend of mine who's a physical assistant over the phone, and he told me to try, like you suggested, the Nasacort or whatever, and Coracetin, you know, those kind of decongestants, but that didn't work. So I'm thinking it has to be then the next phase of discovery to see what causes it. But if it is some kind of that sudden hearing loss, the second phase one, that's not due to congestion or allergies, then does it go away on its own, or does it lead to permanent hearing loss? Do you get loss on the other side? I'm just curious how these things sometimes take a course.
Well, if it's the idiopathic unilateral hearing loss, which is rare, I've seen maybe 3 cases in 30 years, so it's not a common thing. You probably have one of the first two. If it is that, it's anybody's guess. I mean, that could be a permanent hearing loss. And the one case that I can think of off the top of my head that I've seen of that did turn out, despite the steroids and everything else, to be a permanent, pretty much total one-sided hearing loss. The good news is it's one-sided, but the bad news is we can't do anything about it. Or as my physician's assistant used to say, butkus. We
Well, my friend said to it could be due to some sort of a tumor near that middle ear or something.
Oh,
like an MRI or CT scan.
You know, I wouldn't go there first. Acoustic neuroma, which is what we're talking about here. There's that nerve I mentioned, the eighth nerve. It runs through a tunnel, and we get these benign lumps that are from the insulation cells. They're called Schwann cells, and so these are called schwannomas. These Schwann lumps are, they just put pressure on the nerve. That tends to begin, it tends to be more gradual, it tends to be associated with ringing in the ears initially, and sometimes, and often some balance problems or some vertigo. So it's rare for that to manifest as a sudden, pretty global hearing loss without some of these other symptoms, because it's growing slowly and pushing on the nerve. And so generally the nerve has a chance to make some protests before it goes offline. I wouldn't jump to the MRI. Has anybody...
I don't remember any vertigo, but I had a little bit of balance issues, but mm-hmm. I didn't have any serious vertigo, but I did have some tinnitus, but then the tinnitus stopped and the hearing went bye-bye.
Yeah. Well, that's a little more suspicious for that. First thing to do is get somebody to look in your ear canal and make sure you don't have a blocked eardrum or a blocked eustachian tube. Your PA friend, if they're local, could certainly squeeze that one out for you through the back door. If you have access to health care, then just go through the front door and ask them to look in your ear and test your hearing. And that can be done with just a plain old tuning fork that we use to check sensation. And if it looks like you have a sensory hearing loss, then indeed you may end up seeing an ear, nose, and throat doctor and getting that MRI to rule out acoustic neuroma. You know, we're not going to diagnose this over the radio, obviously, but those are the possibilities.
Hey, and thank you for your call. Appreciate you taking the time to join us. Hi, you're on the air with Dr. Don.
Just an anecdote similar to what people are talking about is I once had like this dizziness and falling over and vestibular challenge, and I thought, you know, I had a serious brain nerve problem.
We always go to the bad thing, don't we?
Well, I didn't know. I mean, it came over me. It was like profound. It's like, whoa, what's this? And so I went to the ER, and they irrigated my ear for about 20 minutes, and they flushed out this earwax about the size of a chickpea.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of confirmed what you said. Sometimes it's just these little simple things that can be taken care of that way.
Exactly. In fact, most of the time, it's a simple thing. And that's actually a really good point about the internet and doing Googling your symptoms. I want to get like a bumper sticker that says, Dr. Don says, don't Google your symptoms. Ask Dr. Don. because when you Google your symptoms, you get medical student's disease, which when we learn about these things, we decide that, oh, the next time you have dizziness from a cold or something, you immediately give yourself a brain tumor. I've had lymphoma, leukemia, breast cancer, and multiple sclerosis all before the age of 25. This is the hazard of being in medical school. Fortunately, I didn't actually have any of them, but I thought I did. I looked up the symptoms in my books, and it was like, oh my God, I'm going to die.
What have you got there?
Something spontaneous. You were doing a self-care for students, and I learned that finals are coming up. So I thought I'd share with the student audience a Chinese medicine tip for getting good grades on exams, which I've actually used. And if you go online, you can find a map, an acupuncture map. Look up stomach 36. And it's on the side, it's on the outside of your knee, on the lower leg, just to the side of the bump that your kneecap attaches to. So if you feel down below your knee, there's a big bump below the kneecap. And if you go out 45-degree angle down from that lump, there's a little hollow. That's stomach 36. Right, there it is. And you can push on that with a dull pencil for about 60 seconds and eat some noodles before you study. And this is like to get good grades on exams. You stimulate stomach 36, and
Eat noodles.
And, well, you're supposed to eat noodles because that is good for the spleen, and the spleen is helpful for study. It's, you know, they're very big on food as medicine in Chinese medicine. But anyway, so eat the noodles and have some top ramen. Well, actually, that's got maltodextrin in it, and that's something I'm going to be talking about in just a couple of minutes. So don't eat the maltodextrin.
You can just scrape it off.
You can scrape it off.
All right.
And another thing that happened on the way to the election, or rather on the way out from the election, is marijuana is breaking out all over. Medical marijuana in four new states. We got Arkansas, of all places, Florida, Montana, and
that's
North
Hillary's fault. You know it's her fault that they've legalized that evil weed there.
Montana and North Dakota. I thought that was pretty interesting.
North Dakota. Yeah, I bet you that has something to do with all of the people going up there working on the oil fields, the new voters.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. I guess they could establish residency. And
oh, sure. They've been working up there for years now.
Yeah, you're right. Well, anyway, of course, we've now got marijuana legal in California for recreational use. And amusingly, also Nevada. And
which used to kill people. I mean, their prison terms were like 20 years for possession.
It's quite the reversal, isn't it?
It really is. But, thank you, Harry Reid.
But also, I'm just imagining what the strip is going to look like under, you know.
A green cross at every cross street.
Well, I'm just imagining the effect that has on people's gambling behavior. And
restaurant's going to like it.
And purchasing behavior. And, it's going to be interesting with all those uninhibited people in highly stimulated environments. But, for our purposes, what I wanted to point out was the $1 billion that's been earmarked for the study of medical marijuana. Because that's been one of the real problems that we've had in science, is that it's expensive. Science is expensive. And we have not had any way to fund it. We've not had a way to fund the research that we need to validate and expand the use. So what we've got now is a bunch of lore, you know, passed down from generations over the bong. And the vaporizer now. But, you know, realistically, we need to test those ideas. I have some patients who are growers, and they're, you know, they have all sorts of, you know, finesse, and I'm not sure how much of that is hyperbole and how much of that is actually legitimate. And I'd love to know. I'd love to know that all of these claims about CBD are legitimate. And I'd like to see some blinded studies where people are getting a neutral oil and a CBD oil, and we're testing their pain threshold and all of this. Because the power of suggestion is enormous.
Right.
And as a physician, there are certain things I can feel pretty certain of. Nausea, glaucoma. I mean, the data's there for those. But we're in uncharted territory, and that isn't going to get widespread buy-in from doctors until they get the kind of data that they need to feel comfortable prescribing something. And I believe that this is an excellent agent in many ways, but we don't have the information and the rigor that we need. So this $1 billion will go a long way to getting some people to dedicate themselves to doing this research. And, you know, we need the scientists.
Now, won't the taxes, too, some of that go to back into research?
Well, that's it. That's where the $1 billion is coming from. It's coming off the top.
I thought the billion came someplace else.
No, actually, it's coming from the taxes. They're also going to be doing, I got it here, develop procedures to determine driver impairment due to marijuana consumption. Because obviously, I like the old George Carlin joke about how slow people drive when they're smoking marijuana.
And right. Stop about 10 yards in front of the stop sign.
And we also do have to be really careful about young people. Because, yes, recreational use, but when you have an immature brain, you can have an effect on the way your synapses are forming that, well, A, potentially be lifelong because you're still in neurologic plasticity.
Is that from the smoke or from the THC? What would cause that? Does it happen with tobacco smoke?
No. From what we see, this is probably related to the fact to affecting the cannabinoid receptors. But we don't know exactly what the thresholds are, and it's if you had a serious seizure disorder that couldn't be managed with anything else, bring on the CBD. But we don't want to start. We don't want to encourage young people.
What CBD means?
Okay, that's cannabidiol. I think I'm pronouncing that
cannabinoids?
Right. Cannabinoids? No, it's
cannabinoids.
It is. They're all cannabinoids.
Yeah.
But cannabidiol is, and please forgive me if I'm leaving out a couple of nanas in there because it is. I don't have it written down here, but this is in contradistinction to THC. THC is the one that's super euphoric. And the cannabidiol is more anti-pain and calming to the nerve, but not necessarily giving you a stoned feeling. It tends to help people feel drowsy, and it tends to relieve pain. And it's been showing promise in upset nerve diseases like epilepsy and diabetic neuropathy, which are difficult to treat. And so to have these things coming out, having new agents that could be explored and studied that might be beneficial here would be great, because our current drugs are not very good. So something better would be nice.
Well, they seem to work for arthritis. They make it into a salve for a topical thing. My partner uses it regularly, and she doesn't get high on it at all, but it does work for her particular pain. And I guess the disclaimer is, not everything works for everybody.
Well, there's that, and there's also, so suppose I took the oil that didn't have the cannabidiol in it, and she rubbed it into her joints for exactly the same amount of time, believing that it was going to relieve her pain.
It might, huh?
That's the scientific question that we need to answer. And for that, we need studies, good studies that can be published legitimately in scientific journals and be persuasive to physicians, because now the access is a bit more open, but still, in order to get doctors to recommend it, you're going to have to show them data.
And we're going to have problems with Jeff Sessions.
Yeah, Jeff Sessions. Now that, and it's going to be, I laughed a little bit to myself when I read about that, because
maybe we ought to tell.
Well, Jeff Sessions is the new potential attorney general for Trump, and he's very rapidly anti-marijuana. He's like, you know, war on drugs, Ed Meese level, you know.
I like that, the Ed Meese level, good.
Yeah, well, that dates me, but what the heck. But the idea is take no prisoners kind of approach to the matter. Uncompromising would be another way of saying it. And the difficulty with this is that if you're a Republican or a conservative, you're generally a state's rights kind of person. It's usually the federal government is bad, centralized government bad, decentralized local as we can get, good. And so what does that mean? Well, we've got states here that are making marijuana legal. And now you've got a federal government that's conservative that's going to say, well, we believe in states' rights except for this, you know. And in this case, you know, we don't believe in states' rights. We're going to prosecute. They could tie it up in the courts. I think that's the most likely thing that they'll do is put it into federal court and try to stop this from being implemented. I am not sure how successful that would be. Don't see them coming in with the federal police, you know, a National Guard or something like that, and raiding places, but they could definitely tie up the licensing process for years if they chose to.
Some of those people, I wouldn't put it past them coming in with the National Guard, like Jeff Sessions. I mean, he is such a fanatic about it. I was listening to a speech that he gave about it. It was just...
But you see, if he's the United States Attorney General, he is, among other things, subject to oversight by both Congress and the Supreme Court. And let's just digression for the minute.
Sure.
A conservative Supreme Court justice will tend not to be politically conservative. I mean, they'll be conservative, right? Scalia was very conservative, but they tend to look at the Constitution and hold that up as like the tablets, the stone tablets from from Mount, from yeah. What was the mountain that he climbed up? No, Ararat. Was it Ararat? Okay. So I thought that was where the Ark was. Well, anyway, it doesn't matter.
What are those religious mountains?
I can't keep these biblical mountains straight. But anyway, like the Ten Commandments, you know, written in stone. And in a way, that's a good thing, because the Founding Fathers did a darn good job with the Constitution. And by the way, we're in complete violation of some of the very basic tenets of checks and balances as we speak. But hey, this isn't a political show, it's a medical show. So call in with your medical questions.
Hi, you're on the air with Dr. Don.
I was wondering if I could ask, you guys were talking about marijuana just a minute ago. Can I bring it back to that?
Of course.
What would be the negative effects of marijuana?
The negative effects of marijuana?
Are there any known negatives to smoking marijuana?
Okay, smoking, yeah, for sure. And it really is worse on your lungs, ounce per ounce, than cigarettes are. The thing is, people tend to smoke 20 cigarettes a day, and they might smoke 2 joints a day.
A heavy user, yeah.
It would be a heavy user. So the damage is about 10 to 1. So if you're doing 2 joints a day, you're doing a pack of cigarettes. And so the same sorts of things, and it's not the THC that's getting you high that's doing that. It's the combustion products that are in the weed. So you've got all of these toxins that are produced by burning that are carcinogenic, and they also damage the surfaces in the lung, and they can lead to ultimately emphysema, aggravated asthma. I know some people smoke marijuana and it helps their asthma, and I am perplexed by that, quite honestly. But you can show the same sorts of things on cadaver lungs. You can see the tar deposits and the soot deposits, and the cancer risk does go up, so it's a risk factor for lung cancer if you're a heavy user. That's probably the most fundamental risk. There's an existential risk, which you may or may not care about, and that's that marijuana makes you feel, you know, pretty satisfied to just kind of hang out and enjoy being alive. There's nothing wrong with that, but it also is a life decision to hang out, and your chances of really accomplishing a lot are probably lower if you're smoking 2 joints a day, because you just some of those drives that get us out there to, you know, get a high paying job and keep it in a competitive marketplace, maybe you don't care about that, and that's okay. But you probably would have a hard time, say, getting through medical school if you smoke 2 joints a day, because it affects memory. And you'd have a hard time putting all of that info in there and rewiring your brain such that you could dig it back out again, like I do. And so, you know, you could argue that that's a side effect or a downside, or you could say, hey, you know, the whole point is to sit and enjoy the jewel in the lotus, and in which case, if that's your life philosophy, that, then the existential threat of marijuana is non-existent.
Well, thank you. That was pretty interesting.
All right. Well, thanks for asking the question. I appreciate hearing from you. And that means the lines are back open at 459-4036. And, well, I take that back. You're on the air with Dr. Don.
Hi, this is one of the most compelling talkabouts I've heard.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I have a question pertaining to marijuana. And I first started enjoying it mid-60s, and I was in my early teens. So when are the synapses still forming is my question.
Well, basically up till about 21, there's still fairly substantial visible structural changes in the brain. So there's a point where you will remember this, and we all kind of remember it if we think back, where we start thinking abstractly. We start thinking about life and the universe and the meaning of it all. And it tends to hit you in your teens, and you'll have these late-night conversations where you'll just talk and talk and talk about life, the universe, and everything. And for about 3 to 5 years after that shift, your brain is still changing. And then things kind of settle down, and you just do maintenance. And you form new synapses, you still learn things, but you don't reroute the roads. But up until about somewhere between 21 and 24, you're still rerouting the roads, and we can see that structurally in the brain.
I also had periods of clarity without using herbs, and I liked to read a lot back then, and I just find the climate of socio-political agendas and trying to hold the line to keep so-called conservatives from private action, privatizing our country to smithereens. I find it so worrisome. I have a real hard time reading a book cover to cover anymore since Reagan and his jelly bean etiquette.
Yeah. Well, I understand what you're saying. And one of the things that happens, I'll just kind of turn it medically for you a minute.
Yeah.
One of the things that happens when we become worried or anxious is that we lose our focus, and our brains actually change in terms of our thought patterns, and we're less able to problem solve, and we're less able to maintain focus. We tend to do a kind of freeze in the headlights, and our amygdala, which is the part of the brain that controls our emotions, shifts into high gear, and it disrupts everything else. So I recommend that you do some meditation, some deep breathing, and really learn to elicit the relaxation response through your breath or through your thoughts outside of the use of any kind of chemical substance whatsoever, whether it's a natural chemical or a synthetic chemical. Because if you can gain some better command over your neurotransmitters, then over time you will actually be able to regain some of that focus. We see this, and in fact, I have an article. I don't know if it's in my stack here, but you offer such an wonderful opportunity for me to cite it that I think I will talk about it. And this was a study where they did an online relaxation course. So it was just like 8 weeks, and you plug in online, and they did directed visualization and something called cognitive behavioral therapy, which is one of the many forms of psychotherapy that are out there, one of the more common ones. And it teaches you to think differently and approach your problems differently. And they did an MRI before the class, the 8-week class. And then the people who finished the class, at the end of the class, they did another MRI. And what they found, and all of these people had gone in with anxiety issues, was that the amygdala, which is the center of anxiety in the brain, the amygdala had shrunk by 15% in size. So I bet you didn't know that structures in your brain grow and shrink with that kind of a speed. I don't think any of us expected that result, but I think it's phenomenal to realize how much the physical structure of our brain is actually subject to change depending on the thoughts that we allow ourselves to think.
I thank you from the bottom of my heart. That's really valuable advice to me, and I'll bear it in mind. Thank you very much, John.
All right. Thanks for your call. Appreciate hearing from you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And thanks for your patience. You're on the air with Dr. Don.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question and a comment. Comment relative to marijuana in that I went to 4 years postgraduate education, and I found that if I took a hit while I was studying, I had to take that same hit while I took the test. And if I didn't do it like that, the memory patterns didn't come back. So
right.
That was an interesting way of experimenting. So there's a comment. And then I have a question relative to cigarettes. And I've heard about this in probably, well, a number of different cases where somebody has smoked for, and my dad smoked for 60 years. He got up to almost a half a carton a day.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's insane. I could duck below the cloud layer in his trailer. Anyway, this happened to him, and I've heard it happening to a number of other people. He stopped smoking. 2 years later, he was dead. And I've heard it, one, two, 3 years later, they die after they quit smoking. And I was thinking, well, does the body go into a pattern of recognizing what's going on, and it's able to defend itself enough? And then when you switch, it goes into, what am I doing? What's going on? Mm-hmm. So do you have any thoughts on why that might happen, or is it just...
I do, but I'm gonna actually comment on your point about taking the hit before you took the test, so that the phase was the same. A guy named Jack Sherman had the bench next to me when I was an undergraduate doing rat research at UCLA. And yes, indeed, I tortured rats. I'll cop to it. I did. I thought I was doing it for science. Honest, I did. He did work where he would addict rats to various substances. I think he primarily used cocaine, which... And I think he also used nicotine, but he would get them addicted in a pink cage and they would drink the water that was laced with cocaine, and they would definitely become habituated. But then if he moved them to a blue cage or a green cage where all the cues, the things were all in different places, he found that the trained addicted behavior actually disappeared, and it was very contextual. So what we do when we try to get people away from drugs, generally if you're in a mandated rehab program, you're mandated that you stay in the same neighborhood, you know, and you're mandated, essentially we completely torpedo the process, because what you want to do is you want to change the environment completely. That's going to help people who have addictions get away from them. But the associational power of the brain is what's active here. And in your case, in a lot of times we'll tell people listen to certain music when you're taking a test, so, and then listen to that or when you're studying, and then listen to it when you're taking the test. And you know, you could also do the same thing with drinking pineapple juice or something like that. It's going to link the information, and it helps your brain because it gives you one more hook to connect back to that information in your head, a separate synaptic pathway to get back to that place where that information is. So it definitely does make sense. Now, your question, your point about your father, my dad was a 5-pack-a-dayer at peak, and so I completely understand. It's amazing. My parents divorced and my asthma went away. It was just miraculous. They told me I outgrew it, but it wasn't quite that. What we think is going on with that, and it is a thing, is that you're in a situation where you've got a lot of micro cancers in there, but you're essentially killing them with the cigarettes. And I don't know if he died of a lung cancer, if he died of something else, but we know at least for lung cancer that your most dangerous time is when your lungs try to heal. Because part of healing is the activation of stem cells. And we are now beginning to understand that stem cells are where cancers come from. Terminally differentiated cells can be damaged or killed, but they are not the cells that create a cancer. The cancer comes from these earlier progenitor cells that still maintain certain embryologic properties that allow, for example, rapid growth, the ability to detach and transfer themselves across different tissues, things that you need as an embryo when you're developing, but this DNA should turn itself off. And stem cells don't turn off the ability to grow infinitely, because that's why they're stem cells. We use them to build new terminally differentiated cells. But when those stem cells get mutated, when they get a chance to grow, that's when you get into a cancer situation. So, it's paradoxical. So sometimes you'll give antioxidants to people, if they are smokers and you give them antioxidants and they keep smoking, you'll actually get more lung cancer than if you didn't give them the antioxidants. And you'd think the antioxidants would be protective, but the problem is they're protecting the cancer cells. So,
and in fact, he did die from lung cancer.
Yeah. So, but it's like it's in there, and suddenly when you stop, you know, throwing, basically think about a flamethrower on the lawn. When you finally stop flamethrowering the lawn, that's when you see the weeds.
Okay. Well,
good one.
I appreciate your answers, Aaron. Thanks so much.
Thanks for your call.
Modestly speaking, I have a gift for metaphor.
459-4036. We've got about, another 7-8 minutes here. If you'd like to join in the conversation, we'd love to have you. Hi, you're on the air with Dr. Don.
Hello. Yes, I just wanted to relate to you that I did see Dr. Gupta, Sanjay Gupta, on being interviewed on one of the late-night TV shows, and he is all for medical marijuana now. He said that he is now a believer. He said he was against it. He thought people were just lazy and it was just an excuse, and he started talking about all the medical evidence that they have that medical marijuana is a really good alternative to prescription drugs and stuff like that. So I just wanted to just, I don't know if you guys were aware of that, but, you know, he's very influential.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. The other thing was, I just, in all due respect, I'd like to pick a bone with Dr. Don.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever heard of that comedy routine. I think it was either George Carlin or Bill Hicks or something. They were talking about how they smoked one day and went into their garage to kind of like change the water in their windshield wiper duct or something, and ended up taking the whole engine apart and putting it back together. and those who have used medical or any kind of marijuana for a while have to laugh at that. And I'd just like to ask you, Dr. Don, when you talk about it's an existential choice, and if you want to not go anywhere with your life and just hang out, I just wonder if you've ever heard of somebody called Louis Armstrong or Carl Sagan. Both of these men smoked every day and were quite successful. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of very successful business people who smoke regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a matter of what you bring to it. I don't think there's anything about marijuana that would make you lazy in and of itself. I think it's if you're naturally kind of lazy, I think it might bring that out in you. I think if you smoke too much, you could. But then again, there are various strains of marijuana. You know, as Mr. Sandish knows, there's sativa and there's indica. Sativa,
Africana, and the list goes on. But we've only got a couple of minutes, so get to the end of your statement or ask a question if you don't mind.
I think he just wants to make the point that there's lots of successful things.
Yeah.
You can micromanage your dose with different strains, and there are strains that help with mental clarity. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. A very good call. Appreciate hearing from you. Dr. Don, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they reach you off the air?
Well, you can go to my basic website if you want to call in, if you want to get like an email in and maybe have that answered on one of the programs. You can go to AskDrDon.com. You can go to my medical practice, which is Optimage Health, OptimageHealth.com. And there you'll find links to how you can come and see me as a patient and how my medical practice works. And also on the AskDrDon.com, there's some medical advice and some resources and some links. And that's where we have the archives. This program will show up on AskDrDon.com, and it'll go out on the podcast, which you can also subscribe to at AskDrDon.com. What else? Or through iTunes.
All right, let's take this last call. Hi, you're on the air with Dr. Don.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
So, awesome show tonight. I just wanted to make a comment about the thing about cigarettes being to have 5 times more tar than cannabis.
Actually, it was the opposite. It's not more tar. It's,
sorry, yeah. Right, the opposite.
Yeah, go ahead. Anyway, go ahead.
More tar than cigarettes, so two joints is a pack.
Well, it also has to do with the way you smoke. You know, people hold it in.
That is true.
Press it.
Tobacco basically doesn't make you cough back out the tar. And cannabis is known to have a really strong expectorant effect that causes the user to cough out a lot of the tar.
Well, you know, the biopsies don't lie. So we're talking about, you know, we're talking about taking a dead person's lung and chopping it up and looking at it under a microscope and then looking at the history. So the point is not that I'm not trying to diss marijuana here, but it's, you know, take it if you're going to use it. I don't recommend smoking it. I think if there are other ways that are less physically damaging to the body, and, you know, I think vaporization is probably one of the more safe and effective methods. I don't like the oils, you know, the little electronic cigarettes, because those oils have not really been tested thoroughly, in my opinion, and I worry about long-term side effects from the oils. There are oil droplet inflammatory and restrictive lung diseases that exist, and I'm wondering if we're going to see an epidemic of lung scarring from heavy users of these electronic cigarettes, whether they contain tobacco or marijuana. So when I say vaping, I'm talking about a volcano, all right, not electronic cigarettes, but I do think if you just heat it to the point where you dissolve the THC and volatilize that, but don't get the combustion products, that's much safer.
Totally. I totally get what you're saying. And then another point before you end, I was just reading this interesting article that was saying that the average human breath capacity was 6 liters, but on average we only took a half of a liter per breath. And then after you use cannabis, that the average breath goes up to 12 liters, which is double its standard capacity.
No, sorry, 12 liters is
interesting article that I read in a cannabis book.
It's wrong. I'm sorry. I can categorically tell you nobody's got a vital capacity of 12 liters.
Okay.
That's you. I mean, talk about the barrel chest. You know, it's 4 liters to a gallon. So you're talking about three gallons. Visualize 3 gallons. That's, you're not moving that. That's not a vital capacity. That might be the entire volume of an expanded chest, but you're not moving all of that in and out. So I think they're misunderstanding the physiology. Yeah, I think they're misunderstanding the physiology, or maybe they're writing it in a way that's ambiguous. And they're talking about total lung volume versus vital capacity. And those are nuances that we're not going to get into. It's time to say goodnight.
And thank you for your call. Appreciate hearing from you. And we appreciate all the calls tonight. And we really appreciate that Dr. Don comes down here once a month. It's always a fascinating show. All right. Well, I want to let everybody know that this is KZSC Santa Cruz at UCSC. It's a talk about show. I'm the host, John Sandage.
Well, that's about all for this week's podcast. Please go to AskDrDon.com for news about our future plans, or follow my tweets at AskDrDon. For now, this is Dr. Don saying so long and stay healthy.
Ask Dr. Don is brought to you by Jiva Media. Production and editing by Charles Mansky. Music by John Scoville.